This week on RSBNB Update, the reasons for the Jagex launcher become clear, including an improved platform and support for multiple accounts. We then tear through the live stream, focusing on skill reworks and roadmaps. And then we delve into the newest Treasure Hunter promo, featuring more tradable rares. This is RSBNB Update, episode 874, recorded Thursday, March 24th, 2022. Go for launch. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSBNB Update. Just Tanis and myself here. This week, it is indeed the calm before the storm at this point. At least that's how I feel with what was teased in the news post this week.
That's definitely the feeling I got, a little foreshadowing, I think.
Yeah.
And see where it takes us.
And with that, you guys are obviously listening to this after we've had the reveal stream for the next Elder God Wars quest, but rest assured we will be having a full discussion on that next week with a panel that can discuss it. We figured, we could have come back on Friday, did an addendum to the show, delayed the show a bit, maybe to late Friday into Saturday, but we just wanted to keep things on schedule and come back and do it proper next week with the full panel. So we'll be discussing that reveal on the next week's episode of RSBNB Update. But, that's not to say we don't have big news this week, I think. This is perhaps some of the biggest news we've ever had for RS, and it's news that people have wanted to hear for a long time. But before we do that, if you want to follow along, you can find our full show notes at update.rsbnb.com. And, of course, you can join our friends chat, Bits Bytes, and our Discord is rsbnb.com/Discord. All right, so we got introduced to someone this week. We got introduced to Mod Mac, Vice President of Product and Player Strategy. And, on the whole of it, that sounds like a mouthful of a corporate soup, doesn't it?
A little bit. I don't get the player strategy part. Product manager, yeah, pretty familiar with that term, like everybody is.
Yeah. But. Yeah. And what we're going to do here is we're going to start off with this, and then we're going to go straight into the live stream as we talk about this. But this is a discussion that was put in the form of a news post that they say is part of the commitment to level up the account security and services that Jagex provide. And it's quoted in the news post as saying, "We know that this is something many of you passionately want to see improved. And RuneScape accounts are far, far more than just a game save. They're the embodiment of your adventures, your hard-earned accomplishments, and your valuable time. You want to see that they are protected at all costs, and that there's clear areas where we can do better." And they say, "We hear you." So in 2019, they set off on a multi-year mission to make these long-desired improvements a reality. And they were faced with old technologies, spaghettified code, and ultimately a legacy code base that was not up to the task. So with this, they architected an entirely new Jagex publishing platform in parallel with a number of improvements that are going to be coming live throughout this year. Some of these include stronger account security, which includes adding support to finally support complex passwords. A lot of people don't know this, but RuneScape passwords are just alphanumeric, meaning you can't have special characters in them. And that's something that the industry has been doing for many years. They're also going to be adding multi-factor recovery codes, so if you lose access to your two-factor device, you won't be out in the cold, which was always a bit of a head-scratcher as to what would happen in that case. They want to improve the player support center, in particular focusing on account recovery, and they're going to be exploring a live chat service for selected support queries to improve the accessibility of player support. I know that's something a lot of players are going to be talking about because, if you get locked out of an old account, it can often be going through huge hoops in order to access it. So fingers crossed on that one.
Yeah, I've heard horror stories.
Yeah. Then comes to the Jagex launcher. We kind of had a bit of a brief discussion on this last week. And the reaction from you and David was that, you know, why do we need another launcher when all these game companies are asking us to install their own launchers? And it's just adding to the clutter of clients we have to manage, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, with this, they say that on top of the upcoming changes, alongside the Jagex launcher, they're also working better to protect the player experience, including reinforced protection of character data, in particularly mentioning the login lockout being a perfect storm of failure points, including hardware. And with this, they have significantly upgraded the cyber reliance, both at a hardware and a software level, to protect against this, while also implementing cloud-based save backups to keep your character safe. I wonder how often that happens.
I don't know, but like, what I don't understand is how that connects to the launcher. Why it had, like, you couldn't, could it not be done without it? That, you know what I mean? Like, I don't understand.
It comes down to the unified Jagex account. That's
what
it comes down
to.
You have individual RuneScape accounts that have no linkage whatsoever between them. So if you have multiple,
but if you're a single player, what do you gain?
What do you gain from using the launcher if you're a single player? I don't know, and that might be a question to ask people later on down the path. And alongside the complex password business, there was something that was also mentioned that people have been asking for years. We're also adding the multi-factor authentication recovery codes should you lose access to your two-factor auth device. And with the upcoming Jagex account system, we'll also be introducing the ability to link all your characters under a single set of login credentials.
That is nice.
Yes.
I mean, I'm not a single player. I do play the alt sometimes, but I used to hate having to do the authenticator on each one of them.
Yep.
They'd pop up at different times. You know what I mean? Like, it's, it has, you know, good things. It's just another launcher.
Yeah. And, you know, it might be framed better if it was specifically focusing on the Jagex account on that, because that's what everybody is going to want, right?
And that's kind of what I was thinking, like, if this could have been in conjunction, you know, but between last week and this week almost.
And that's the thing, it will be, it's just that connection wasn't made immediately when the launcher post came out, and we'll talk more about that in the live stream, things that were touched on. But the idea of having multiple characters under a single account is something that all the other MMOs do. So.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I can't think of any.
Yeah.
I can't think of a single one.
And this kind of raises the question to me, will there ever be like an ultimate membership package where you can get membership for one price for all your accounts? Or is that too much of a ding in the pocketbook, I wonder, given Altscape's current stature?
Well, Altscape probably pays a lot of bills. I mean,
yeah, and I mean, we're looking at them being, you know, two people who have alts. I have one with membership. I don't know if yours currently has membership.
My alt doesn't, but when I play my alt, it does, right?
So, yeah.
A lot of times what will happen is I'll decide, oh, I'm going hardcore RuneScape for a while, and I'll do the 3-month package on the alt.
Yeah.
And then I just keep Premier on the main.
Right. Okay. Fair enough. Anyways, before we get to the live stream, there's also a section here on the war on bots, and they talk about the 2020 shutdown of the RS bot. From the PowerBot website, which we talked about here on the show. And right now, they say they're banning around 100,000 bots a week. And while the systems are not bulletproof, they make continual improvements to keep the bots out so that the players can have the best game that they have. And boy, we've come so far from the point at which bots were going to, you know, just destroy the company whatsoever, right? So that's that's good. Protecting the economy is something that they say they know is important to everyone, so they expanded efforts to tackle real-world trading, particularly by issuing warnings, time bans, and permanent bans to gold buyers. And to date, they've issued 38,000 warnings and bans to players for real-world trading.
It still blows my mind that there's that much real-world money out there.
Over the past year, they've also shut down 18 gold real-world trading houses. And the Duel Arena, and here's the numbers people have been wondering about. The Duel Arena apparently accounted for 38% of all real-world trading bans. So there's your money laundering that was happening there.
You know, money laundering and gambling kind of goes hand in hand. It's not like the mob didn't keep two sets of books or something, you know.
As they do, right?
As they do.
So, and then they talk about some more stuff on the back end about blocking fraudulent payments and whatnot. But I felt it was very interesting to hear from these people because, you know, quite clearly, this Jagex publishing platform going into 2019 is a whole of company approach, which speaks from the CEO and perhaps managers slightly underneath the CEO who are going to be in charge of putting these kind of experiences together for the players. And I felt reassured with this post. How did you feel?
Well, definitely a little bit more hopeful that we are getting more, like, yeah, we talked about it would bring accounts, you know, under one roof, but honestly it sounds like it's actually, you know, a lot more than that. It may be like a new kind of, well, it's a new starting point. I mean, I wouldn't go as far as calling it a complete foundation, but it definitely puts some cornerstones down where hopefully they can go even further with it. You know, it's going to be hard to get me off my Steam client, but definitely when I'm playing multiple accounts, I'll definitely be using and being able to recover. I'm sorry, I'm going back, but being able to recover your account from my when you lose your two-factor device, that's big.
Yeah, because, I mean, you wind up in a situation where your phone gets literally destroyed, and if you don't have a backup of that code that created that linked with your Google Authenticator, you're kind of out of luck unless you can get to support on that.
Yeah, and like you said, a lot of hoops. When it comes to doing that.
Yeah. All right, let's dive into the live stream then. This one is split up into two parts. The first part had Mods Fife and Corpse on board with Mod Huli as host. Fife is the executive producer of the publishing platform, and Mod Corpse is the director of product. And these guys, once again, have some very impressive talent stacks. Mod Fife has 25 years in the video game industry. He's worked on series like the Descent series and Ratchet & Clank, and he joined Jagex 18 months ago and helped bring Melver Idol to market. Mod Corpse is at his second run at Jagex, and he first joined in 2006 to run something called Fun Orb, and then left in 2010 and came back in 2019. So we're dealing with some serious heavy hitters here who were interviewed this week. And
yeah.
Does it feel like, again, we're in that same situation where Jagex is actually now attracting wider talent from the video game industry, or at least searching it out?
I think so, but I think we saw that. Well, I mean, I don't know if it started with Mod Warden, but that was the first time that I had noticed it.
Yeah,
and it was, you know,
yeah, just it's
very visible.
Once again, it's that same start time of about 2019. So somebody clearly made a decision in early 2019 to bring all these people on board, and then of course that trickled down, and they brought people in on all the various other aspects of it under them. And based on this, it feels like it's helped, but let's dive into this a bit. They went through exactly what the publishing platform does. And once again, we mentioned that title sounded a lot like corporate soup, but to distill it down to its simplest thing, the publishing platform works on things like accounts and security, payments in the shop, the launcher, the websites, and anything that will facilitate access to the game. And the reason they wanted to do this was that the old platform was the one that was designed in 2001 by Andrew Gower. So prior to this, you were dealing with things that go back to 2001. In particular, with this, they wanted a best-in-class architecture, something that was built for security and performance, better bad actor mitigation. But the old platform, they said, was able to do things like the Steam integration, the mobile integration. The login lockout happened on that. Cloud saves, Group Iron Man, and other releases as well. So it was a question of effectively iterating on that and bringing everything forward to this new platform. And with this, the Jagex launcher in 2022, as we talked about, will have the remembered credentials, fix the too many login attempts bug that can crop up from time to time, and later on in the year, it will bring direct access to Runelite for old school, multi-character support, and improved UI support, and support for the Jagex account. And this is where we actually got to have a bit of a deep dive into what this looked like. The Jagex account features verifiable email addresses, improved password complexity, multi-factor backup codes, bot protection, a better recovery flow, and you'll be able to log in with it on multiple characters at the same time. And I think it's at this point where the Jagex launcher was perhaps sold.
Yeah, multiple at the same time. That's a little bit more of a game changer, right?
Exactly. Without needing to, you know, necessarily worry about firing off multiple game clients. This time you just have the Jagex launcher do it. So
yeah, that is kind of nice.
Yeah.
And I bet you don't get the you know how you get those login errors every once in a while. You're trying to log in and you can't. It's like, try again later. You're like, oh, okay.
Yeah,
but that won't happen anymore.
I'd imagine that would be included in that. So the timeline on this, right now they're at the open beta stage. Next will be Runelite support, followed by a full release, including macOS support, an improved UI, and the ability to actually install the Runelite client from this launcher. So they're going all in on Runelite with this.
And I wonder, like, that's cool, Runelite, but can Alt 1 get some love? Like,
and see, that's the thing. That's not an actual piece of software that is a client. It's kind of something that just overlays with the existing client. And I think that would be a greater philosophical discussion for everybody to have at the end of the day if that should be integrated.
Well, but I mean, would it be really any different than having a launcher, say like ESO has, where you can download all the mods that you want, and it just helps you organize which ones you're turning on, which ones you're turning off.
Right. Because that's effectively what Runelite is with its plugins.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to stick with Runelite, fine. Can we get a RS3 Runelite that has the accessibility features that I can use of Alt 1? Like, that'd be cool.
Oh boy. You've opened a can of worms here, because you have to say, would Jagex have the time for that? Would it be worth doing the investment on? And if not, do you open up the client to allow people to dabble with it, as has happened through initially with reverse engineering on the old school side, and then embrace Well, we know what Mod Warden said when he was here. Uh-huh. He wanted to open it up.
That's what I said. Yep. That's so where I was
that's
going.
That's why he went that way.
Yep. It is.
And then the final stages will be JAGEX accounts, account conversion, and then account unification.
Okay.
So, I wonder if we ask the listeners of the podcast and in general, are you now sold on the JAGEX launcher after hearing what it's going to enable in terms of multiple accounts and what's happening under the hood? Ask a player, ask yourselves if you're listening to this, are you sold? Are you sold now?
I am definitely sold when I'm going to be running more than one account. So that will probably mean that I'll use it all the time. Yeah, I mean, I've just been used to using Steam lately, right? Like, ever since it came out. So I kind of have to switch from that. But, yeah, I mean, you might as well, right? Like, I don't love another launcher, but I might as well. It's, you know.
And with this, you know, they said that not only will it be a focus on this kind of improvements, this is just that next evolutionary step, so to speak, in that, you know, you'll still be able to, if you wanted to, log in via Steam with a JAGEX account. So I assume Steam will still be an option for this, because you want to keep that first class experience where you just press a button on Steam and the game opens up.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I do like that. Yeah. So, that's probably why I use it.
And focusing on communication, they say visit jagex.com/launcher to keep up to date with new features. There is going to be technical blogs for those interested, and there will also be blog posts on major releases when that happens. So.
All right, stay tuned.
I think I'm sold. And we'll just have to wait and see where this goes, but overall, I guess we know what all those server maintenance cycles were for now, whenever the game was rebooting for a little bit longer than normal, is that they were upgrading infrastructure and hardware to enable things like this to happen. So, All in all, good news. But you ready to move on into the rest of the live stream?
Yeah.
Okay. And then we pivoted to a general Q&A. And with this, Mod, Shogun, Jack, and Mike joined the live stream, and I'm just going to go through some of the questions here. You know, a lot of the questions seem to be commonly appearing with one another, so it's not necessarily something that we need to spend too much time on. But first and foremost, the question of the economy and a potential max cash rework, that project is now on the schedule. It has a developer design to it, and there's a design with it now. So it's happening.
That's probably a good thing.
It's happening.
Cool.
And they're currently at the phase where they're deciding, do they do a smaller project that gets delivered more quickly, or a bigger project that tackles more issues? And we know where we've heard this before.
I feel like we've heard it a few times before.
Right. Mining and smithing, bank rework, yada, 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 right?
Yeah. Yep. So on and so forth.
I feel like going bigger is better. But once again, we don't have eyes on everything that's been talked about with this. Are you still in the bigger is better camp for these kind of things?
You know, but I mean, I guess, but I feel like it's like asking me, should America print a $1 trillion coin? Sure. I don't give a shit. I'll never see it. Maybe in a museum. No, not even then. I might see a picture. So, I don't know if does that normalize these...
The inflation problems, right?
Yeah, that's the only...
Yeah.
And I don't know. Like, I'm legitimately asking because, like, I don't know.
When like we've said before, so many times with this, it has to be a whole of economy solution. You can't just add platinum tokens and connect them up with the GE and call it done, because that doesn't change the fact that there's multiple items trading north of current max cash, 2.1 bill. The question needs to be asked, and we don't have the information to ask this, and no player has the information to ask this. The question needs to be asked, is inflation a problem? Is there enough money coming into the game? Is there enough money going out of game through things like death and whatnot? No player has the information to answer that question. And if you have some stupid attitude where you feel that you have the idea that you know better, and if Jagex isn't giving the information that gives you the license to make a decision for that, I have to say that, you know, that's precisely why I don't think players need to be involved in any decision making on this, because it just needs to be done with the people who have the information, honestly.
Yeah, even then, you know, you never know how things could turn out.
Yeah.
I'm sure someone's kind of philosophy plays a role in that, and but at the end of the day, it's really never going to affect me very much.
Well, no, it will, yeah. Because it's a whole of economy problem, and whatever happens at the top end of the economy does ultimately trickle down in terms of all the various prices and whatnot that you pay for your goods that you buy, your supplies you buy, the fish you mine, or the fish you catch in the ores that you mine. So it does have an impact on you.
Yeah, I mean, relatively, inflation impacts the poor a little bit less, but poor in the game anyway. because I'm down here mining, and I just don't see this having a big impact on me. But I hear what you're saying. Now's the time to go Iron Man style, right?
Yeah.
And, it's self-sufficient.
And, you know, on this whole economy question, for me personally, I've gotten to a point where I don't like keeping actually too much cash around. I'd much rather have it in assets just in case something does drop or something does change that changes what the value of a gold piece is. So, are there any changes for, quote, dead or outdated skills? Can obviously kind of tell.
What?
That was a legitimate question.
It's not mobilizing armies, okay? The minute I see you take out the giant moles a day, you can take out a skill. Come on now. I'll fight Queen still down there buzzing her ass off. Come on. What the hell?
And you know what skill this was talking about, right?
You know, there could be a number. You're gonna have to be more specific.
Wood cutting. The question was about wood cutting.
Oh, wood cutting. Well, see what we did, Shane.
Yes.
Damn it! You missed the point. We don't want to get rid of it.
What? We're chopping. We're barking up the wrong tree.
Hey, yeah. There you go.
But they said there's no plans for a full woodcutting rework or full reworks, anything like mining and smithing. What could be done? There's no plans yet. They looked at smaller projects to add things in different ways to train, and the ideas that, of course, come to mind when they talk about adding new training methods are things like deep-sea fishing and safe cracking.
You know, it almost feels like, didn't we use those exact examples in the middle path you developed?
Yeah.
I thought so.
Tannis is talking about our past monthly bit, Patreon bonus show that we talked about redefining skills that could potentially use an update. So,
like we're fortune tellers, Shane.
Yeah. I mean, that kind of happens after 15 years, right?
I think so.
Okay. More skill questions. I think we need to talk about monthly bits after this one. Could RuneCrafting get some love? I.e. pouches being filled from a bank preset. And I just want everybody to say that I'm not editorializing these questions. These were actual summaries of the questions that were asked. But yeah, pouches would be a good target for a Ninja Strike, like the ability to have them be filled from bank preset. Unsurprisingly, no major RuneCrafting rework on the horizon. I think we got three very good ways of training RuneCrafting right now: the Abyss, RuneSpan, and Soul Runes.
It's almost like we had a recent discussion about that as well.
Boy, we need to be preaching the gospel more and spreading the monthly bits around, don't we?
I'm telling you.
I think next time we have to release a monthly bit, we'll release the one on skill reworks based on how things go. I think that would be a good target for that.
Yeah, I think so. Agree.
And with that, they're looking for the right balance this year between quests, combat, and skilling. Right? Because we were kind of combat heavy last year, weren't we? And we've been kind of combat heavy this year too.
Just a smidge. Mm-hmm. And that which surprises me, because you know, like the summertime, that's hardly ever a skilling drop or update. Don't bring up menopause. Forget about that. So I mean, I wouldn't see a significant like major skilling update probably until fall. I don't know.
Yeah, the last big one that came was archaeology. That was the spring of 2020.
That was the spring, yeah.
Anachronia was summer.
I mean, towards the very end. Yeah. Right? It was August time. Yeah.
Herb lore and farming was Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
Right before Christmas. So, but in terms of the caliber of kind of skilling updates that we could be looking out for, once again, the idea of things like deep sea fishing and safe cracking came up. That kind of skilling update.
Yeah, and I think we even talked about like the middle of the road approach was probably going to be what, you know, what was most feasible and probably what direction Jagex would take.
Yeah, and it looks like that's where they're going.
And you know, I really don't mind. I like deep sea fishing a lot. Yeah. I think it did a lot for fishing, and you know, while I love my mining and smithing rework and our 120 farming and herb lures, I know we can't have them every year.
Yeah.
So you know, these should be significant, you know, significant pieces of content.
Yeah, because I remember when deep sea fishing came out, that kept me occupied for, you know, 2 or 3 weeks. That was enough to get me over to the next headliner.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, definitely, fine with doing that. And I think at this point, we'll thank some Patreon supporters, because without them, we wouldn't have had that fine opportunity to discuss skill reworks. So this week in particular, I would like to thank Amos Reed, Andrew C., Arvids L., Big Huge Rat, Bryflex, Christian S., Chunk the Monk, Cook Me Plocks, Diana, Duramax, Elo Matey, Plaza Man, Free Milk, Jacob R., Jade Gizmo, Jason S., Jeebus, Jesse W., Ling01, Nick G., Nate the Great, Patty the Architect, Parnassius, Renhawk, Ricky A., Samuel F.L., Skiotan, Scott D.S., Seth W., Stabiv, Taylor B., The Naked Captain, The Lion, Tom V., Zant, and Zazakon. Thank you, everybody, for your support. It truly means the world to us. And what everybody here that we mentioned and more has access to is something called the Monthly Bit, which is our special Patreon bonus show that we launch at the start of each month. And the one coming up that you'll be getting in about a week's time is going to be taking a look at what RuneScape might look like if the 2019 Comp Cape rework actually happened. We've done other ones in the past, looking at Dailyscape. We've also done one that's very, very relevant to the questions we've been discussing so far from the live stream about what skill reworks could look like. We talked about woodcutting. We talked about fire making, how you could look into these skills and rework them with varying degrees of new additions to them. We also looked at thieving. What would a thieving 120 look like? And we looked through the whole spectrum of what reworks on these would look like, starting out with, you know, big grand reworks like mining and smithing, but also smaller things like those one-shot type updates like deep sea fishing applied to fire making, for example. So if this sounds interesting to you, you want access to any of these monthly bits, all you need to do is head on over to patreon.com/rsbnb and sign up for as little as $1 a month. You'll gain access to that entire back catalog of monthly bits that helps fund the podcast and more. For a little bit more, for $3 a month, you'll receive a special VIP rank on the RSBNB Discord and I mentioned on the podcast at the start of the month. You'll also gain access to high-quality stereo versions of the show in addition to everything else. We also do have a $5 a month tier where you receive a shout-out on the podcast each and every week and gain exclusive access to the outtakes that we use to make the clip show at the end of the year. But, of course, there's more. As we head into April, patrons will receive an exclusive thank you gift, a nice mail out thanking them for their patronage going back all the way to the very beginning, allowing us to do what we do here. I saw some updated pictures of how that's coming along. It's looking really good. So if you're interested in receiving that, you can sign up at patreon.com/rsbnb. Just make sure you include the option to share shipping information with us and you'll get that probably some point in April based on how things are looking. But of course, we're also working to the Haunt Ones Challenge at $500 a month. Should we ever reach that huge high tier, Tannis, myself, and some others will take on the Haunt Ones Challenge and subject our taste buds to a whole range of spice while having all the haunt questions thrown at us. And quite honestly, at that point, I'm worried more about the questions than the spice.
I'm not worried about the questions. I'm worried about trying to answer them while my throat is closing in around me. But while tears are streaming down my face.
Well, if this sounds interesting to you, check us out at patreon.com/rsbnb. Thanks so much, everybody. Whether you're there to just get one monthly bit or a whole boatload of them, definitely check out the one on skill reworks. All right. Let's continue on down the live stream here. So, continuing on from this, will the in-game polling system ever be used? That's a bit of a loaded question, isn't it? Because there's such a history behind it.
It's been used, and I don't even think we can have democracy anymore.
Well, there's no plans to currently use it in-game.
Well, whoever lost would just say they won anyway. Bitch about it until there's another poll.
But the way ModJack sees it is that the polling system can be used to effectively break an irreconcilable opinion within the community. But he finds it's often better to work with the community to find a solution rather than just polling and saying, here, 53% of you said yes, this is which way you're going, because that leaves the 47% relatively upset. So,
And I actually think that's a good lesson to have taken from it.
It should have been that way all along.
Yeah.
In all honesty. So I'm glad that he has that perspective now on him. With the title of senior game designer. So that makes me happy. He says if a project had a design and that was shown to the community and then received pushback, the design could be iterated on and then pulled. That's one place he sees it potentially being used. And he's more interested in hearing the specific arguments about why something is bad rather than just having a majority of people not like it and then everybody just moving on from that.
I don't know if I would have cracked that door open, but...
What were you thinking of in terms of that being cracked
open? I wasn't thinking of content per se. I was thinking about platforms where they would very much oblige him with page after page of commentary and reasons why something is bad.
Yeah, you gotta wonder how much people like Jack and whatnot go and read that. So,
yeah.
But I feel like we're in a good place with the way this question was answered.
Yeah, I do too.
So, all right. Seeing how immensely popular retro skins are there any chance you'll produce more than 5 as part of the upcoming release? And we'll talk about this after, in particular, which ones people have chosen. And they said, given how popular this has been, there will likely be more releases of these going forward. And they might even throw some older items in because they're likely to have a quicker turnaround time if they're simpler models. So I figure that's a straightforward question. And we'll come back to which ones we want after. Group Iron Man Dungeoneering is being worked on. No concrete release date yet. Now here's one about the direction. And this was a big question in the past recently around the whole limbo of that summer drought of content with Red Roman Anachronia came out, I think it was. How far out do you plan and think about the content? Months, years in advance? And with this, he says that they have about 5 to 10 years planned in vague detail that can change freely. 1 year in very close detail that might need updates, and this has been the general path since Desperate Times. And I think we've felt that, haven't we?
Yeah. Maybe throw in a 3-year plan in between your 1 and 5.
Yeah.
Say.
Yeah, I think so. But
because you can, I think that might be why we do feel wild swings from time to time, or why
one thing
gets emphasized so heavy, and then you think it's going to be picked up on, but it goes in a completely different direction.
Like the Inquisitors, for example.
Yeah.
From archaeology.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. But do you think they need to telegraph this more based on what we've been hearing and just having our ear to the ground with the community? Do you think they need to hear about this more? Because there's the idea with this coming back about a 2022 roadmap.
So I don't think we necessarily have to know about it more as long as they know about it.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I want them to know about it.
More importantly than us.
Yeah.
All right.
Exactly.
I'm going to move on to the roadmap question because that was a couple of questions down from this. They said they wanted to be more transparent with about what's on the way. And the reason they haven't been able to do that now is because it's more about how the story unfolds, in particular how things could be considered to be organized into sections, chapters, or seasons. So they can't necessarily say what the big thing next is without revealing the end of what we're currently on, if that makes sense.
Well, it does, because there was this conscious effort to tie, you know, the content in with story and really integrate it into the game. So that makes sense, because, you know, for every action you're going to have, it's going to make you think, okay, this happened.
Yeah.
So, you know, no, I get that. And it makes sense to me.
Yeah. They're putting together a reveal about what the next certain chapter or section or season or whatever you want to call it looks like, and we'll be seeing that relatively soon, which, as we know, there's a quest coming soon that will end the Elder God Wars line, presumably, and they're gonna stop ignoring it and focus on more of what's coming up next with clearer reveals. And they say they haven't had an opportunity to do big reveals like this because that used to happen with RuneFest. But they could have had their own virtual thing last year and the year before. Like, they could have taken an afternoon and done a, you know, a keynote with some kind of community in-game event, like a virtual RuneFest kind of thing.
And, you know, everyone else was doing that too. Yeah. So, I mean, it would have been just, I don't think anybody would have minded under the circumstances.
No.
And, you know, going forward, once we get this Elder God Wars season, chapter, whatever, age wrapped up, I think they could integrate story with pieces of content without having to have an overarching big storyline.
Yeah.
Like, you could bring in a new, let's just say, a new woodcutting skilling method and have it just kind of maybe bring in some gnomes, an off thing, just a one-off kind of thing. There's no reason we couldn't use the characters we have to tell stories within these, you know, new pieces of content that didn't have an overarching storyline that you had to conform to.
Yeah, that's fair. 100% fair on that. And then, you remember what the golden mantra of this podcast was post-Menaphos?
Yes.
Yeah. The next thing was is that they need to walk the right line between setting and meeting expectations and generating excitement, which is a difficult compromise.
Uh-huh. I kept that with me, too.
Mm-hmm. And exactly to the tune of that, 4 years ago, there was too much information. 2 years ago, not enough.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we've always had that in the back of our mind, too, ever since Menaphos. And it feels like until they started that whole Desperate Times angle that we're on that kicked this storyline off, that they had forgot about that as well. So.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, it did serve us well because we had moderate expectations for Anachronia and were fairly pleased, right? Like, I mean, it wasn't knock your socks off, but it was good.
The hardest thing for you was getting around.
The hardest thing for me was getting around, yeah. And that did get improved. And then we tempered our expectations when it came to archaeology and then got blown away by it. So managing expectations, kind of a big deal.
Yeah, it's almost like they need their own press secretary to do that.
You know, that something to be said for the old spin master.
Exactly. And people don't like the term spin master, but that's exactly what it is.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what a press secretary does.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter for who or what side or what, that's their job.
Yeah. And the reveals they want to do will happen before the final Elder God Wars boss.
Hmm.
So, on that front puts it May or June. The quest is April.
Mm-hmm.
There we go.
So see, we were right on.
It's all about setting expectations, isn't it?
I think it is.
All right. Continuing on, could you add bots to mini games like Pest Control so that those mini games can be played when they're out of spotlight? The answer was that's a good idea in theory, but balancing is quite hard with that. And the general answer is that there's a bit of a problem with minigames, and Mojang doesn't want solo minigames with bots to be the solution. So if there's rewards that are deemed to be must-have by the community, his preferred approach would just be to add a better version of that reward to a new piece of content. And the thing that immediately came to my mind in that was the Void Knight equipment.
Well, that's, because there's no... I mean, that's... There was a time when it was viable.
Yeah. And now the spotlight and veiler system is effectively just the way to go with minigames.
Yeah. And I'm sorry to say it, but, like, do you think that RuneScape players in general would be able to differentiate between good bots and bad bots? Or they're all just bots? Like,
interesting. I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah, I think Majak is right on this.
And you know, he has the history of being the person who tells the community what they need to hear. You might not like it though.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Will future Yak tracks have the same skill and kill approach that we have in this one, or was it a one-off? The answer is that it's not a one-off, and the next one will still have it. And they're trying to find a way to make Yak track tasks feel less intrusive to how you play the game.
Well, I'll tell you what.
There's a flip side to that.
There is. I absolutely think it's, you know, I love that I've gotten all the cosmetics and I didn't have to do nothing for them other than just play how I normally would have played anyway. Which update, by the way, we are on task 29.
Ooh,
I have not done anything different.
I'm on 34 and I've been focusing largely on the actual task.
Yeah. So, you know, there's that. But like we said before, there was something about going and doing your stuff. I'm still kind of torn on it.
Yeah. And I think we had a good discussion when that one came out with Thaxi here.
Yeah, I think so.
Because it raises a point in that they're trying to make Yak Track tasks feel less intrusive to how you play the game. But there were people like myself who wanted the option to, in effect, be told what to do. Whereas now, if you give me Dungeoneering and Runecrafting back to back without a second choice of task, I'm probably just going to go for the skill and kill on those.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to do Dungeoneering. I don't want to do, you know, 2 hours of Runecrafting at the Runespan when I could complete the skill and kill in less time.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I mean, that would have been a spin token. That would have been a token anyway.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. I haven't used any skips yet.
Yeah, I haven't either. If I do use them, I'm sure it will be like task 50 or something, you know?
Right. Yeah, those.
But I really don't think it's going to be a problem getting this done. I really don't.
Yeah, well, we mapped it out. It's basically 1.8 hours a day.
Yeah.
Which isn't too bad. But in the longer term, they're looking at changing Yak Track and the way the rewards work, and it will always retain the skill and kill element. It won't go back so that it feels like you're doing things you don't want to be doing, but they're going to look at changing it. Do you think we could be headed to a point where you get either the A task or the B task, which is skill and kill that we have right now, and then as you do that, you have certain amounts of, you know, Yak Track points you could spend, and then maybe you could choose what cosmetics you unlock, or maybe you go for the lamps or stars or the cosmetics instead. Maybe that's a way of doing it.
I mean, it could be, you know, I think Thaxi's idea of just having a third option, maybe
that's always skill and kill, and then just retain what it was, right?
Yeah. Because then, I mean, if you want to choose, you have a choice. You can still kind of follow the track.
Yeah.
Or you can do what I'm doing right now and never do anything different, just like a battle pass. So, you know.
Yeah, and I think it's important to just highlight that there are those of us who like Yak Track for the diversity it brings to our gameplay style.
Well, yeah, I mean, that was originally kind of the beauty of it. That's why I really do think his options, you know, it's just the simplest and easiest.
Yeah. But I'm curious to hear what that long-term strategy would look like. But, you know, you don't add one of these things and just keep it static. You iterate on it each time, which is generally the way the industry goes these days. So, all right. Is there a dedicated team who works on storytelling and writing? The way it works is that the Lore Council plans, verifies, and checks stories, and most of the game content and writing is done by the actual developers themselves. And the idea that they had behind this is that if somebody's writing a quest and they need to specifically know if what they're writing is in line with what a certain character might do, then that's when they would consult the Lore Council. So that's interesting to hear. Is there a plan to look at top-end gear and weapons that rely heavily on Switchscape? And Mod Jack said that he doesn't want to add too much to Switchscape because he finds it to just be very odd in his own words. And with that, he's wondering, could there be a better way at introducing a higher skill ceiling in game? So. But we all know it's a massive part of the PVN end game, and they view it as a fine line that they're walking. And they said they could, you know, just make an update relatively easily, probably, that would make it so you couldn't switch gear in combat. But they're not sure they'd really want to upend the meta in such a way, because that'd be a very dangerous and risky thing to do.
Yeah, I see I get their desire for it. But I just don't know if Switchscape to me is a byproduct of the way the combat triangle works and the way tick system works.
Yeah.
And I don't know if we can get around that.
Yeah. And you know, I'm going to be completely honest with you. I'm trying to think of where, if anywhere, I've used switches. Like, and you can comment on if you feel this is Switchscape, but do you consider shields a Switchscape byproduct? Or defenders?
A defender, no, but a shield, probably.
Okay.
You know, because you normally, you know, if when you, back in the day, when you're using a shield.
You always use a shield.
Right, and in most games, you know, it's the sword and board style. You lose a little bit of DPS, but you gain a little bit of defense, and you also get the ability to use defensive ability. So it makes a niche for it. And we don't really have that the same way.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah,
I don't know. I mean. Honestly, there's a lot of that at the high end, and I personally don't like the idea of it. So, will there be a login lockout postmortem? The idea behind this going forward is that it could potentially be done by one of the content creators. In particular, they're working with Will Missit, who is working on a series about the history of things that happened at Jagex, and maybe the login lockout could be one of these. So that's where they're going with that currently. New style interfaces with the marketplace and Yak Track, a taste of what's to come. They're not going to just change the style for the heck of it. In effect, what they're going to do is they're going to focus on practical things first. Like, are things easy to read and are they accessible?
Well, how about that?
Yeah. That's good and important.
Very good.
Yeah. Some of the UI things will come from the Ninja team. There's also some mobile UI improvements on the way as well. Now, this was an interesting question because it was asked, is there any chance of being given an option for a PvE wilderness or effectively a non-PvP wilderness with Revenants back? And once again, more editorializing on the person's part who wrote this question, it's clear that a PvP wilderness is not a popular concept anymore. Mm-hmm. And chat overwhelmingly agreed with this, that there should be an option for a non-PvP-based wilderness.
Here's the thing, because what if you wanted to go hunt something at the Revenants? You can't. You always have to, you can, but you have to worry about somebody coming and ruining your day. And I understand there's supposed to be risk reward, so on and so forth. But I'm not so sure that is the best way of doing PvP. Most games set it up with two sides or two, you know, different things that are gonna fight. They don't have to rely on preying on poor, you know, people that are just playing the game.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Revenants is a good example of a place that more people would interact with, I think, if they could. They didn't have to worry about PvPers.
They also see the wilderness as a place that can be expanded into if need be with this. Four and three.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? This time next year, we might be talking about that, given the response it had. Gilinar Games. No, that's not like you come back. And finally, is there a plan for content cadence to pick up later this year? They said they missed the timing this year between the gap between Het's Oasis and the Abyssal Slayer creatures. We felt that. Releases will be targeted earlier in the month. And with the Elder God Wars cadence, they maintained it, but the team was overstretched with the four bosses back to back. It was really big and huge for the team.
Well, they did, but they pulled those off.
They did pull it off, but apparently...
they pulled that off. It was afterwards, so apparently...
That went into it, though. So.
And then everyone crashed and said, we can't make it.
Yeah, I don't know what the gap was, but based on this, things should hopefully be heating up soon. And as we mentioned, we have the live stream, or had the live stream. We'll talk about that next week. I think it's going to be the finale for the Elder God Wars quest.
Mm-hmm. Big one. What a boss to follow in May.
And you know, if we're wrong. You guys will know by the time you're hearing this. All right. That was the live stream. And now we're just going to go into the patch notes, which we do have a few of them this week. They updated the look of the 20-year veteran cape based on community feedback. And I believe now is the time that I should actually log into game and show this off. It's got particles on it. It's still got the shiny nature to it. It doesn't look cardboardy anymore, the two X's, so that's good. Oh, and you know the best part? They got rid of the triple X's.
Oh, okay.
And yeah. It's not just particles, it's actually sparks. It doesn't actually look too bad.
Hmm.
Okay.
I'm just surprised they didn't give it a toggle to... Here's a retro looking 20-year cape.
Yeah, retro from what, 2 months ago?
Yeah. Wait, it might be coming.
Oh God, please no.
We like the old one better.
I don't know. I honestly think this is an improvement from what we had, though I wasn't necessarily too fussy about the first one. And the emote is the same as it was before, so they kept the emote the same. They just changed the design of the cape and the particles around it. So, I gave it a pass, and it's still got the metallic textures on it. So, that's a win in my book. Then, all right. The Book of Jazz was only storing damage for 14 game cycles, which was 8.4 seconds compared to the 17 cycles or 10.2 seconds that it was supposed to, based on the tooltip for it.
Well, that's a pretty big difference there.
Yeah.
Double?
I mean, people are going to want their extra 1.8 seconds, I guess,
mm-hmm.
of damage absorption that's channeled back. Throwing a bomb at an NPC you're not actively targeting will once again refocus that NPC as your current target in relation to the Ninja Strike from last week or the week before. Sign of the Porter no longer fills all the empty space in the inventory when a player tries to wear one with an active sign equip. I have no idea what this means, but it feels like an edge case.
Yeah, I don't either.
The skill guide entry for Santa's Fire Torch now correctly state that it has a 20% chance to cut an extra log rather than the 40% that it was saying previously. And we should be clear that that's only a text change for this. The actual content change for this has functioned at 20% before. Each daily combat challenge now tracks kills separately. I don't know if that'd be a benefit or a drawback if you're doing early combat challenges, but lo and behold, there we are. The Dwarf Multicannon, Aldak Coil, and Kinetic Cyclone damage upgrades will no longer reset on completion of the Dwarf Cannon quest. Oh, God.
Whoa.
And whoa. I wonder if that completely would have wiped it away, or...
Because,
you know, the ranged and magic ones are like 28, 30 mil still.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty high.
Yeah. Players with a full backpack are now able to pick up ammo of the same type that they have in their ammo slot.
Oh, that's really cool.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Just put it straight to the quiver. The Luminous Alchemist's amulet now allows for 20 free high alchemy uses per day. So we got that plus the Explorer's Ring. So numerous free alks, I guess. I don't know necessarily that I have one of these, but we'll take it. The title for the item production interface now states the correct skill during Big Game Hunter. And this is one that I'm interested about, this next one. Noted versions of the fungus from the Croesus Front can now be used as food in the player-owned farm. Specifically fungus, so we're talking about mushrooms here.
I didn't realize you could take that out.
Well, no, these are the skilling nodes, right?
Oh, well, yeah, but I still didn't realize you could take them out of the, like, fight.
Oh, no, we're not talking about the ones outside of the fight. We're talking about the ones in the main room there.
Right, like when you're fighting Croesus.
No. Like in outside that on the actual front.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I got
like
you.
Like the ones that are used to make the soup and such.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah. I wonder if that's the most economical fungus that's currently out there for zygomites. I'm going to have to look into that. That's a stumbling block for me. Mm-hmm. Yak Track skill and kill tests now progress correctly when killing Zuck minions. Made improvement to legacy auto hit splats to make them visually different to legacy ability hit splats. And this isn't talking about legacy mode. You can actually go into the settings and change what your hit splats look like and make them look like their old legacy ones. Personally, I don't like the idea of this and don't do this because I think that should be remain distinct. But I guess if you wanted to do that, you could. There's now that legacy option for that. So, and let's see, added a different cursor icon when selecting to throw a Herb Lord bomb, fine. And then some engine updates, Herbie Werby particles weren't appearing, fixed a vertical alignment issue when using vector fonts, that's why the chat boxes might look slightly different this week. I honestly think they look better. Now, improved performance on Mac, iOS, and Android this week. And, you know, after this update, I'm getting practically 60 FPS everywhere except Sentinel.
Oh, damn. Okay.
Yeah. So it was, it's definitely noticeable. I have to say that much.
Nice.
I just suspect it's because Sentinel's a very busy area that I'm not able to, but I mean, like even running through the Tower of Voices in Prif, 60 FPS.
Damn.
Anachronia, high 50s. That never used to happen.
Get it, Mac.
Yeah. Though with that, I haven't talked to anybody with a new Apple Silicon Mac, so I'm not entirely sure how those would work compared to the old Intel ones, which is what I'm running. Reduce stutter when moving between areas on modern devices. Improve water reflections on Anachronia. Made improvements to the lighting when viewing any models in the UI. So for things like cosmetics and such is what we'd be talking about with this. Improve the hitbox accuracy of several areas, including Anachronia and the Hetz Oasis agility courses. and archaeology sites like Infernal Source and Stormguard, and the Ranch at a Time paddocks. That's good.
Okay. Yeah.
Anytime we're talking about improving click boxes on agility courses, we're there for that.
Yes. Yep.
And hover text is now displayed correctly and fixed a crash when unplugging or switching audio devices.
Oh. Ooh.
Yeah, I heard
that's
some,
no good.
I've heard some people get bit by that. So yeah, overall, ouch. Good patches this week, and I was really happy to see the macOS changes. So big shout out to the engine team for allowing this kind of thing to happen on that. Because I remember a point, and I'm sure you remember me talking about this and complaining about it, but there was a point in which I was considering abandoning the macOS platform. Because, you know, this is a game, runs very well on Windows, and I could do most of the audio podcast stuff I was doing on Windows, that it might have just been time to consider that, but I don't need to be considering that right now, because things are working very well, both in-game and out-of-game, in terms of my setup, so that's good.
Mm-hmm.
All right, retro skins. We kind of talked about this at the roundtable last weekend. They're looking for feedback until March 25th, which by the time you're hearing this, the time will be gone. But what effectively is going to happen is that the top five choices from a public vote of all the ideas that are sent forward are going to be put towards a community vote that will make up a community bundle of new cosmetics. For me, I always went to the old 2005, 2004 era, the Dragon Longsword. That's the one that I said with this. I know the Dragon Claws were very popular. What would you like to see out of this?
You know, I was trying to remember what I was thinking at the round table, and if I remember right, I'd like to see some of the, you know, the gold-trimmed god armor.
Yes, that's exactly what you said. Day. That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was the god armor, because, you know, we have the trim plate armor, but we don't have the old legacy Ceridoman armors, god armors, and gilded and such, so... I think that's a good choice. And, you know, at the end of the day, I think we've established that RuneScape, as it has its community, has such a wide myriad of players that are going to want X, Y, or Z for a cosmetic. But bringing out new cosmetics, specifically old legacy cosmetics, I think is perhaps one of the simplest things that Jagex could do to build goodwill with the community, if we're being honest.
Well, it's simple, and let's face it, they'll make a killing off of something like this. People will buy it.
Like,
there's no blowback, because it's not even a microtransaction.
Oh, yeah. Like, I mean, if they were legacy cosmetics, no question, I'd drop a bond or two on that.
Absolutely. And, I mean, you know, it would be hard for me to probably wear something over the, you know, the flashier new cosmetics that I'm wearing now.
Right.
But totally would be down on board for throwing a bond or two that way. Like, you know, totally.
Yeah. So, it's going to be interesting to see what players choose. I hope we get the legacy dragon weapons. That would be good for me. But I feel like this is, going to be really interesting, because they said it could even be slight alterations of existing items. And you know where the Bits Bytes French chat went with this?
Scythe,
bunny ears, and blue Santa hat.
Okay.
Funny, eh?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, very funny. But everybody knows Green Santa hat, of course, came from that Treasure Hunter promo. And there's actually one of these running right now in-game. the Vault of Riches, unless there's anything else on cosmetics you'd like to talk about.
Nope.
All right. So the Vault of Riches is the current promo, and we have to talk about this one. Normally we don't talk about Treasure Hunter promos, but we have to talk about this one because it's got all your usual Treasure Hunter items and whatnot on it, right? Mm-hmm. But it's also got coin packages of 200 mil, 500 mil, 5 million, 1 million, and 250K. It's also got tradable rares of the Hall of Fame walk animation override, a diamond cane, a ruby cane, an emerald cane, and a diamond title. This promo is currently running in game for the next week. And if you open up the promo, you can actually see what the Hall of Fame walk animation override looks like. I'm not going to lie. I kind of want it. But
yeah. You know, all the best promos always hit me between paydays, and it sucks.
Right.
Like, I swear to God, all the best ones hit at that time.
Holy cow.
What'd you get?
No, I didn't get anything. The Hall of Fame walk override token is currently selling for 630 mil.
Ah. Well, I could
There's your tradable rare.
Mil. Yeah.
There's your tradable rare. Diamond canes? 50 mil.
I can see that. Yeah, I got me a gold cane. I need to upgrade, put some ice on it.
Yeah. The elven sniper with a cane.
Uh-huh.
And in addition to that, they're running Phoenix Lamps and Smoldering Lamps in this.
Well, why not?
Yeah. And so the way this works is that for every certain number of coins or for a certain number of keys that you use. And for science here, I bought a couple of keys with oddments. As you use extra keys, you unlock the opportunity to open up other chests, kind of just like what we had with the Christmas Green Santa hat one. So you can see what they're doing here with this.
Yeah, the more keys you buy, the better your chances. Keep buying, guys.
Yeah. How do you feel about me buying 5 keys with oddments right here, right now on the show to just kind of show this off?
I wouldn't be surprised if you got something good, but I wonder just how high, you know, just how many keys do you have to spend before you get a chance with something good?
Ooh, I just won 5 mil.
Okay, so 1 key, apparently. I mean, you know. Cool.
That's actually one of the more common prizes. Ooh, a giant prismatic lamp, a purple.
Damn.
But no, we can actually math some of that out right now if you'd like. Chances of getting a diamond chest is 4% chance. So, let me just pull out the calculator here and do this. So 4% chance, so that's 0.04. Or 0. Didn't anticipate doing math right now, but we can do it. So let's say you buy 60 keys. You have an 8% chance of not getting a diamond chest. You buy 60 keys. And that's just the diamond chest. That doesn't include things like the Hall of Fame walk animation override.
Right.
And in the diamond chest, that breaks down to a 3.3% chance of getting the Hall of Fame walk animation override. So let's see, 1 minus 0.0003 32. Now, if you were to open 100 chests, we're effectively looking at with this probably about 5 to 6 times the chance of getting this as a green sand hat.
So
based on where we were at with that, assuming 5 to 6% or 5 to 6 times higher chance of getting that than the green Santa hat. Still very rare. Based on that, probably about 100-ish keys, give or take. Probably, if I had to guess. Based on what the math would look like if you start looking at that.
Well, that's better. The hat's a lot better than the Santa
hat. Yeah, it's a lot better than the Santa hat, because that Santa hat was less than a 1% chance. So.
Yeah, and if there's one thing I know about the walks is once they go away, they go up.
Yeah.
You know,
and then that's
pretty dramatically.
And that's, of course, what happened with the zombie one, which is still a plague. I honestly don't like that one just because of how much noise it introduces. So.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that one, yeah, the noise sucks. It's a cool walk, though. I always use it at Halloween time.
Right. Oh, hey, I just got a ruby cane.
Of course.
I got 10 more. Apparently that one's worth 15 mil presently.
Okay.
And just the usual disclaimer. I'm doing this with oddments, because I never spend my oddments. I have like 150k of them. So.
Holy cow. Wow. You couldn't spend them on XP if you wanted to. It would take you like 3 months.
Right.
Of daily maxing out.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, why do that now when I got all my 120s and whatnot? So maybe I'll do it through the duration of this event and see what I get.
Hey, there you go.
Huh. Ruby cane. Market value presently 190 bill, but the mil, but the price checker says 15. Huh? Oh, and not only does it have the ruby on it, it's got that golden texture that is used on things like the money tree and the 20-year cape.
Oh, cool.
I'm totally going to get flamed if I use a picture of me wielding this cane for the thumbnail of this video, aren't I?
You might. Might be worth it.
It might be. Might be. Anyways, I think the story at the end of the day here, folks, is that there's new tradable rares on Treasure Hunter.
It's your tradable rare. It's come on.
Upwards of 500 mil worth. So if you get that walk animation. But I don't know. I'm closing in on being able to purchase the Saren Godbow, so maybe I'd rather cash out on that. And purchase that instead.
Well, viable option. I mean, yeah. And the funny thing is, it's only about 100. I mean, I say only about 100 mil, but you know what? About 100 mil between the difference between winning 500 mil and getting the walk animation.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, if that of course requires the diamond chest to be struck. So, interesting. Apparently, you get a guaranteed diamond chest after 25 keys.
Oh, snap!
Okay, so that's how they do it. Then is because you then, in effect, get a roll on that table of the diamond chest, and then in there, you have the 3.32% chance of getting the Hall of Fame walk animation. Okay. So ignore what I said earlier for the math. I thought that you could get these at any point through the rarity, or maybe you can, but I don't know. I think the point of this needs to be that there's new tradable rares on Treasure Hunter at this point. So
yeah.
All right. Time to pivot. This time to skilling once again for the micro lessons, and this micro lesson this week is on invention skilling perk. So we're going to have a listen to that right now. In this micro lesson, you'll learn the basics of skilling invention perks. A micro lesson is a short and to the point video guide that teaches you about RuneScape. This time, I'm going to teach you what skilling perks are commonly used and where you may want to use them. Perks and invention are often overwhelming in-game, and our goal today will be to discuss perks that are used while skilling at the mid to high levels. We'll go over which perks you need and which ones you might want to consider using. As always with invention, it is easier to craft certain perks if you can boost over level 100 invention. And if you've unlocked ancient invention through archaeology or using a blueprint bought from another player. We'll be pairing perks into options for gathering skills, artisan skills, and then some miscellaneous options. For gathering skills, the first perk we'll talk about is Hone. Hone gives a 2% chance per rank of successfully gathering items, and while mining has a 2% chance of mining an additional ore. This means the perk increases experience and or profit. This perk is almost always present, and with ancient invention, it was made easier to obtain at higher ranks. Next up is Fortune. It has a chance to send a copy of what you gathered to your bank. It can also double the artifacts received while training archaeology, providing a big chunk of experience. The perk also interacts with boosts like stone spirits and the resourceful aura while mining. This perk is created with relatively few components, so it is commonly paired with the next four perks we'll discuss. Impsol is a perk that has a chance to automatically bank items when gathering. Each time it activates, it will use 30 prayer points. This means that using a tool like the Ancient Elven Ritual Shard or Prayer Renewal Potion is required, or the perk does not work. Refined gives a scaling chance per rank of preventing a resource from being depleted. While mining, it increases your chance to find geodes. This is particularly useful for woodcutting, especially when woodcutting bloodwood trees, as Backriminal Bolts are a wonderful moneymaker. Furnace will consume the item gathered and give double the experience. You should not use this if maximizing profit or resources gained. While mining, this perk gives no progress if it activates. Our next perk is Polishing. It only works with mining, woodcutting, and fishing. It provides a scaling chance to upgrade most core items to the next tier. For mining, this is very useful as it allows you to get multiple ore types, taking longer to fill your ore box up, which means less bank trips. For our artisan skills, the choices are a little bit simpler. Tinker has a scaling chance to award 25% extra XP while firemaking, and a 2% chance per rank while smithing to award double progress. Pyromaniac is a firemaking-only perk that gives a chance to burn all logs of the same type in one action when adding logs to a bonfire. This perk is often paired with Rapid as one of the best options for firemaking. Rapid is one of the most expensive perks, and as it says, it makes your skilling faster. In particular, it has a 5% chance per rank to make firemaking faster by one tick, and while smithing, it gives a 5% chance per rank to grant double progress, but double heat is also lost. This means that Rapid while smithing is better for a more active playstyle. Our next perk is Breakdown, which is a smithing-only perk that provides a chance to grant the components for the items as if you had disassembled them, though the item is not actually disassembled. This perk can be paired with Rapid too cheaply if you're on the hunt for invention components, and is a good alternative to Rapid if you're playing in a more AFK style. The previously mentioned perks will help you earn more experience or money while skilling. There are some miscellaneous options that can be considered as well. Prosper should be considered if you like clues. It can be paired with either Honed or more easily with Tinker. The bulk of clues received will be hard clues, which are a favorite of avid cluers. While you will likely want to focus your skilling tool perks on experience or moneymaking, the mobile perk is something that we should discuss. Mobile has the cooldown of Surge, Escape, and Bladed Dive, making them gain no adrenaline. This can help you get around easier. With mobile being a weapon perk, that means you cannot use a skilling offhand if using mobile. This perk on its own is cheap to create and can be paired with our next perk, Wise, on something like an enhanced Excalibur. Wise can be placed in a weapon, armor, or tool gizmo. It's often paired with mobile, and while expensive at the high end, the enhanced Excalibur provides a decent option for this combo if you do not have a skilling offhand. On screen now are a couple of example setups for both budget options and a more expensive setup for the various gathering and artisan skills we've talked about. Something you need to take away from this lesson is that the perks you choose are entirely up to your preference, and there are many viable combinations. Please note that this micro lesson is intentionally brief. The points laid out in this lesson are general rules, and it's important to set up your own perks according to your own preferences. You can find perk recipes and more information about the perks themselves at the wiki pages linked in the description below. If you feel we've missed anything, maybe a favorite or niche perk combo, or if you have any questions for us, feel free to add them to the comments below. And if you found this video useful, like and subscribe. YouTube.com/RSBNB for this micro lesson and all the other micro lessons that we're going to be working on. This was number two in the skilling series, and I enjoyed putting this one together. I don't think it was as complicated as the invention one for combat was, but I think it was definitely still worthwhile going through some of the perks, specifically the pitfalls of things like rapid and where you might want to use polishing and whatnot. Is there anything new for you in these?
No, but it's funny because I was just talking with Brew last week about breakdown and what a good perk it is for smithing. So,
yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of funny that came up.
Yeah, and I knew we were on the right track when I sent you the preliminary list of perks we were going to be discussing, and you said, nope, you got them all.
Yeah.
Do you want to tease what our next micro lesson is going to be?
I think we might be shedding some light on how to make this game a little bit more accessible for you, whether you have an eye problem like I do, or you just want to see your bossy or surroundings better.
Yeah, and you know, this is something that a lot of players are going to be discovering for the first time with this. And it's something that was initially supposed to be for content creators, and we're talking about filters and skyboxes. So I figured if there's anybody to talk about that, to do an accessibility micro lesson on how to make the game more accessible with those filters and skyboxes, you're definitely the one for that. So before we began here, we were reviewing the final script for that, and it's looking pretty good. So that should be next week's, barring any major catastrophic failures.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. But youtube.com/RSBNB for all these micro lessons and more. Give us a like and subscribe if you want to see more. All right. Let's move on to our picks of the week then, shall we? You want to go first or shall I?
I'll go first, all right, and then you can follow up. My pick this week is another game from Game Pass, but this is a kind of a big one, and it is Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy. So a little while back, we were promised an Avengers game. We got an Avengers game. Not a very good one. Guardians of the Galaxy kind of makes up for that. It's a much, much better, you know, superhero game. It's a lot. I think it's kind of what we were hoping for with Avengers, but it came in Guardians of the Galaxy. And of course, it retains, you know, that Guardians of the Galaxy humor that I think is one of the highlights of the movies and stuff. But of course, it is, you know, it's free on Game Pass, and that's why I love it the most, because can't beat that.
Yep.
But yeah, that's my pick of the week. Check it out if you got Game Pass. It's definitely worth a playthrough. You know, it's fun story, fun gameplay.
And not to mention, if you haven't had Game Pass before, you can get a month for a buck.
Mm-hmm.
You use that month and you can play any game in their library. This one, Microsoft Flight Simulator, so many other games are out there that we've talked about before. It's one of the hidden gems, and I think one of the number one reasons why people should buy an Xbox. So
yeah, I mean, even if you're not a Xbox person, you should definitely invest in Game Pass.
Right, because there's the PC version as well now.
Well, yeah, and you can, well, even with the regular version, you know, you can upgrade that so that you have access to the cloud gaming, and the cloud gaming gives you everything on the Xbox, right?
Like, right.
And it's
on
not
an iPad
bad.
Potentially, or a Mac even.
Yeah, yeah, and it's not bad at all. Like, I mean, I play Forza Horizon 5. Most of the time, it's doesn't have any problems.
Wow.
And that is a major, wow, you know, Poland game.
Amazing. Yeah. Amazing. I know we're talking a lot about Game Pass and Xbox with this, but it always comes back to that whenever these come up, just because of the fundamental good deal that it is, both for the service and for the platform itself. But mine is also a good deal. If anybody is interested in Paradox strategy games, particular EU4, Europa Universalis 4, there's now a bundle, a humble bundle, of all of the DLC, 33 plus items for that DLC. And this is something that would normally cost, I believe, to get the entire DLC package, north of $250 plus, almost $300 if you wanted to do this. And for anybody who's played a Paradox game before, Europa Universalis 4, Hearts of Iron 4, Stellaris, Victoria 2, just to name a few of them, they are very in-depth, very mechanically driven. So if you like that kind of strategy game, like Civ 5, Civ 6, for example, but you want something that's a little bit deeper in the mechanics, that's where these games come into play. It's not uncommon for these to, you know, just say, oh, I'm going to do an hour or so, and the next thing you know, 6 or 7 hours have gone by. That's the kind of game we're talking about here. And as with the Humble Bundle things that often appear on that website, portions of it do go to charity. This one supports the World Central Kitchen, and with this you're actually able to support more to charity, less to charity, or specifically choose how much you give to say, I want to give the minimum to Humble Bundle, but I want to give instead all of it to the charity, or I want to give all of it to Paradox. You can choose, pick and choose with that if you want to do that. So it's a good service, and Humble Bundle does this a lot. They have a Ukraine bundle that's ending and is over by the time you're hearing this, but I want to talk about the EU4 bundle because this is definitely something, if you're interested in that kind of gameplay, it's an opportunity that arises only every so often. So that's my pick of the week, the Europa Universalis 4 complete bundle available on Humble Bundle. And both of our picks of the week can be found linked in the show notes at update.rsvmb.com.
Nice pick, Shane. Now just don't start out as Russia, because you'll start in a war and have negative money.
Yeah.
So I don't want to do that.
Yeah. You know, starting as Muscovy and then trying to form Russia is always an interesting game to see whether or not one of your neighbors will try and beat up on you.
Uh-huh.
So, all right. Some achievables. Starting off this week, we have Atmohua with 99 crafting on the 23rd. Brewski 17 got 99 dungeoneering. Mr. M got 99 thieving. And Quester Shit got 120 strength. Atmohua comes up again on the 22nd with 99 runecrafting. And on the 21st, we have RR Man and Zed with 120 archaeology. That's a big one.
Yeah.
Todio22 got 99 dungeoneering. And then on the 20th, we have Big Diggy with 99 constitution. Crazy Leg 722 with 99 smithing and 99 ranged. Soap Eater with 99 defense. And Tenny Kiot with 120 farming.
All right, and then on the 19th, we have Big Diggy with 99 Slayer. We have Dark Wizard with 99 Divination. Ichazi with 120 Invention. Sparty Pants with 120 Dungeoneering. And Casper with 99 Magic starting on the 18th. Then we have Iron Ass with 99 Invention. We have Aliosif with 99 construction. That was on the 17th. Atmohua with 99 agility on the 17th. Insight with 120 invention. And Iron Ass with 99 smithing, all on the 17th.
Nice. Nicely done, very everybody. Nice. Oh, what have you been up to on RS?
Unintentionally yak tracking.
Okay. That's allowable. You said task 29.
Yeah. Task 29. You know, just doing my thing, just grinding this 120 mining out, and yeah, I mean, that's really been about it. But I've been so busy with work that I literally get done, have dinner, and I watch a couple episodes of DS9 and play mobile while I do it before.
Right. And, you know, honestly, at this point in the game, I think that's what a lot of RS players are doing. And Jagex realized that and have designed the game to be able to foster that kind of gameplay style. And, you know, like, and that's, you know, kind of the same for me, too, this week. As of, you know, just aside from the usual AFK style yak tracking that you do when you're working on other things. Aside from that kind of play for me this week on RS, my login has been primarily to do a Reaper task here and there and raids. So I've become that kind of player.
There ain't nothing wrong with that.
No.
We're all getting older, Shane.
Yeah.
Everyone has to make a living. They got houses. They got kids. You got shit to do.
And honestly, you know? I'm enjoying it that way. Like, just being able to do the raids every so often like that and keeping up with that kind of game style.
You know, there's something really nice about laying in your bed, reading a little bit before you go to sleep, and just playing some RuneScape.
Oh, yeah.
Nice AFK, low-key kind of stuff. Yep.
Yeah. And, you know, I think if we would have been having this discussion before mobile came out, I think over time, we didn't truly appreciate how mobile was going to have an influence on the game, but lo and behold, here we are, and it has.
And mostly many positive ways.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I think at some point what I want to do, I really want to finish this yak track, and I'm going to use the opportunity with the skill and kills that come up to knock off the last couple comp requirements. I know I got the one coming up that's about doing construction contracts, so I'll definitely be doing that to try and finish that one off. And then after that, it's really just Dominion Tower. And then I'll be comped, believe it or not.
Wow, nice.
Yep. But that's a topic for a couple weeks in advance as we progress through that. I'm taking it nice and slow. But
well, yeah, you got to have a party, Shane.
Really?
For comp? Yeah.
Oh. I wasn't planning on doing that. I was just planning on doing it in a dark corner and maybe taking a screenshot.
You know, a lot of people do that. So, I mean, you know, to each his own, but.
Yeah, maybe. We'll,
I want a parade if it ever happened to me.
I'm not doing a parade, but maybe we'll have to gather at the Dominion Tower or something for that just to kind of send that. No, wait, we'll send Dominion Tower and Temple trekking off into the bowels of history.
Yes,
those are the two biggest ones.
Yeah.
In any case, I believe that's it for this week's episode of RSBNB Update. We'll be back next week to discuss the reveal of the upcoming quest and so much more. And with that being said, if you want this podcast delivered automatically to you, you can do that on any number of platforms. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, Amazon, Pocket Casts, and more. Just visit update.rsbnb.com/subscribe. And of course, if you like the micro lessons, if you like the video versions of the show that we do, check us out on YouTube at youtube.com/RSBNB. Like and subscribe there and share those micro lessons around because we want those to be successful because we feel that they're a very special format that we like delving into deeply and it's a natural progression for us. So youtube.com/RSBNB. But with that being said, we'll see you guys next week for another episode of RSBNB Update.
Yeah.